Hello and welcome to this special mini episode of the Business of Show Business podcast with me, Jamie Boddy. Today I'm joined by Steve Rowe, who is the founder and director of Hoopla Improv. Join this episode where we're talking about why improvisation skills are so important, not only to performers, but why everyone should take a class and why you should have improv skills in your back pocket. Also, we're talking about the 20th anniversary Hoopla Festival and all things the business of show business. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the Business of Show Business podcast. Things are getting busy for you at the moment as you ramp up to your 20th anniversary Improv Festival. Tell me a little bit more about Hoopla and why things are really starting to pop in the improv world.
Thanks, Jamie. Yeah, thanks for having me on. So Hoopla started 20 years ago, and it just feels amazing saying that. It doesn't feel like that long. It's just flown by. And we started as like a little free kind of drop-in above in a room above a pub in Balham, and then just year on year it grew and grew and grew and took off. And then we set up like an improv theatre, and we now run courses like all across central London. So this year we're 20 years old, so we thought we'd celebrate by having loads of shows, like inviting back loads of previous groups that performed there. And we've got shows running all the way from April until the end of June in a big 20th anniversary improv festival.
It's almost like a nice lead up as well to like Edinburgh Fringe and other fringe festivals, because I'm sure many of your performers might even have shows or part of improv troupes that are potentially going to Edinburgh Fringe.
That's right. Yes. So it does coincide nicely with that. So for instance, we're lucky enough to have Showstoppers, the improvised musical. And obviously they're up in the West End and they do Edinburgh Fringe. But they did loads of their early shows at Hoopla. So they're back at Hoopla doing a little show with us in May, which is going to be awesome. And yeah, we've got like lots of great groups that April, May, June, July is like amazing time for them because they get to like develop their show and take it to the fringe in a big way.
Improv, I think every creative should do. Like, I've done it, especially over the last kind of couple of years that I work quite a lot as an interviewer and presenter. I found improv and the ability to just muck in that yes and of if there's a tricky situation or a prickly interview, how do you keep it moving? So I think improv is such a great skill to have in your toolkit. Why do you think actors, creatives, freelancers should do improv, even if it's literally one or two drop-in classes?
Yeah, people come for so many different reasons. I'd say like the biggest one really for us is play, like being playful in adult life. And I think that's why I got into it in the first place as well. It's like I was finding adult life kind of a bit boring, not boring as such, but like can be stressful. And I was when like the foundation of Hoopla really was me and some friends like 20 years ago, just being like, when was the last time life was really fun? And we're just like, let's go back to these things we used to do way back at high school. We're just bringing that back. And so for me, it's about having that playfulness. And I think that playfulness can go into everything. So like, if you're an actor, for instance, rather than getting hung up on like, didn't I make one audition? You can just be like, right, I'm going to play with this. I'm going to do 1,000 auditions this year and like, treat it like a game. Or if you're public speaking, it's like that playfulness can mean when things pop up that you weren't expected, you're like, well, I'm kind of used to playing with this in improv. Like if I've just done improv the night before where I had no idea what was happening and I just performed an entire improvised play in front of an audience, then the next time you're public speaking, it kind of feels a bit easier because you're like, well, I've done something way more hard than this. So I think it's just about having that playfulness at Hoopla in a safe place where you're free to like take risks, try out different things, try out different characters, try out different ways of being. And I think that then rubs off into like lots of other areas of life.
What have been some of the challenges? Obviously, if you rewind 20 years ago, as you said, a couple of friends above a pub. Now, fast forward to here, massive festival, lots of alumni that you will see on TV and in touring productions and in the West End. What may be some of the challenges of building an improv theatre culture almost? Because I guess maybe 20 years ago, people were like, what are you doing? Why is there that play? Because as an adult, you're not meant to play.
Yeah, so it's interesting that question because you mentioned culture there, and I think for me that's like a biggie. So like in terms of like helping overcome challenges of running a company for 20 years, for me it always comes back to culture, and like a big role of my for me as director is defining the company values, communicating them, and really defending them. And that's like the biggest thing I think with Hoopla, that for our audience, the people who work here. They always say like that it's a very, very value-led culture. So things like making improv like accessible for everybody, making improv like fun and playful, you know, listening and support and that kind of culture, like that's the most important thing. And I think quite often the other role as leader is like choosing what not to do, because there's so much like you could do in a company, in a theatre company. Sometimes the most difficult decisions aren't necessarily like what to do next. They're kind of what not to do, because you're like, oh, I could try these 20 things this year, but we will probably end up like not achieving any of them. And sometimes you just have to say goodbye to ideas and think, right, okay, we're not going to do that this year. We're not going to do that. We're going to focus on this stuff. I mean, way back when with it, there was even talk of like, are we going to do like a lot more than improv? Like, are we going to do like all sorts of training? And I'm really glad that I chose to actually just focus on improv, because that's what you then get known as. And I think also like the strength of that in terms of, to go back to your question, like getting through the challenges, but, yeah, there's all manner of like, it would be like a 5-hour podcast if I talked about all the challenges you have with the business, because there's all the unexpected things and, you know, beyond, there's the creative side of stuff, but there's like the business side of stuff, the money, the tax, the tech side of stuff, marketing side of things. There's so much to it, as I'm sure all the other guests have mentioned. That what really gets you through it, I'd say, is like the relationships you have with your team. So like I have very positive working relationships, and we have a team that every Monday at 10 a.m., the first thing we do on a group call is we talk about good news. So we say like, you know, what good news is there from the weekend? Have you got Hoopla good news? Have you got Life from the good news? And it's not saying that kind of challenges aren't going to happen. It just means you've got a foundation at the start of the week where you just remind yourself that our company is like making loads of like joy for like thousands of people every year. Like we're putting on courses and there's people who've never done improv before who are like really flourishing. So, yeah.
And what's great there, which you said, is that I think in the arts, and I have this conversation all the time with people where in the arts, typically, if you're really good at something over years, you may level up and become a manager, choreographer, director, producer or whatnot. But there's not always that infrastructure for training on those business skills, the stakeholder management, being able to say no, but still incentivize your team. So I thought it was really lovely there that you say that your values as a leader is nice, because sometimes in the arts, there's not that infrastructure, which is great. So where did you learn those skills? Was it on the journey? Did they transfer from an other like vocation you had in life, or was it kind of just like baptism by fire?
Kind of all of the above, really. I've got some nice stories about that, actually. So I'll just have the most random inspiration. This is so random, but I was watching The Wire, you know, the TV series. Yeah. And I haven't even watched it that much, but the bit I happen to be watching is like one of the drug dealers just decides to send himself through business school to like become a better drug dealer. And I was watching it. I was like weirdly respectful of him. And I was like, this is so bizarre, because like he's not a pleasant person, but like he's trying to make the most of the shit he's in.
Yeah.
And then I was watching it and I was like, well, why? I'm struggling with like business decisions with running Hoopla. So I was like, why don't I do business school? So I did. Like, I think it was about 12 years into running Hoopla.
Yeah.
I knew we were going to expand, as in I was going to be managing more teachers, more people. And I definitely had got to the point where I was like, this is way beyond the level of experience. And like, I'm like floundering. And I was just like, with marketing and stuff, I was like, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing anymore. So I started doing like management courses on the side. So I did, actually, it was a really good one, Open University Online. That was actually probably like really helpful. Did that. And I was just doing like a couple of hours a day doing like Open University Online, like management and business courses. And then I started a MBA at University of Sussex near where I live. And that was kind of part time. So it's just like once every couple of weeks, I was going in for a day there.
Yeah.
I didn't finish it in the end because then COVID kicked in. I didn't feel like doing that one online, but I did about half of that course. And yeah, I mean, those two things were like, yeah, hugely helpful. Like I'd really recommend it. And the MBA one, it was like, it was really nice. And I think I just kind of embraced the responsibility in the end rather than run away from it. I think like previously I'd been a kind of creative person that were shy of like stepping into the business things. And then actually, I think I just kind of found a more like whole self way of looking at it, which was like, I can be creative with the business stuff, not just the things on stage. And I think that's when it all came together for me, really.
I love that you said that, because I think quite often I speak, and a lot of listeners from this podcast are performers, maybe who are transitioning out the on stage creativity. And I mention all these roles, whether it's in marketing, production, writing, that there's you can still be creative in your life, and it doesn't mean you're less than by maybe not bringing it to life on stage. With your lineups, how are you, for instance, with this 25th anniversary festival, how are you programming it? Is it all nostalgia alumni, or have you kind of had people pitch to you, or are you often going to different lineups, different showcases to kind of spot talent?
That's a really good question. So one thing I wanted to avoid, I very rarely look backwards in time, to tell you the truth. So I've, like most of my time with Hoopla, I've been like looking at the present moment or planning ahead. And I've always shied away of being kind of nostalgic or in the past too much. So this is the first time really that I've actually looked backwards. So because of that, I was quite aware that I wanted to celebrate 20 years, but I didn't want to be like stuck in it. So we have like lots of reunion shows where we went through and being like who used to perform here, but then went on to like West End stuff. So we first thing we did, we contacted people that like the Showstoppers, like cast from Ostentatious, cast from the Comedy Store Players, who kind of used to perform at Hoopla before moving on to more like West Endy type venues, and got in touch with them, and like yeah, that was a great response, and they were like loads of them were interested in performing back at Hoopla, which was lovely. And then we're looking at like the present moment as well. So we're looking at shows that are there regularly and thinking like, can you do 20th anniversary specials? Can you do something cool? And that was fantastic. And then also we then did like a kind of more open application process for like more the future of improv. So people with new shows, people want to try out stuff. Because a big part of us as well is that we always want to have like space for grassroots improv. So like for new and up and coming performers. So yeah, it's been like a real mix of things.
And are you, maybe it's too early doors to say, but obviously now that SNL UK has launched over here, have you found maybe an injection of new people to the medium? Obviously, we've had some amazing shows in the past with like Have I Got News For You and things like that. So it's not necessarily a new concept, but have you found maybe with SNL there's like a newer buzz or maybe a younger audience coming to it?
Yeah, definitely. So SNL has already made a massive impact on us, actually. It's only done two episodes. So I'm really hoping it stays forever because it's been a huge influence. So, I mean, it was great. When SNL UK first started producing, they got in touch with us, and we were like one of the few companies that were advising them on like up and coming comedians and things. And also, it was a great break for us because some of our previous like house team members, like people who performed with Hoopla regularly, got into their writing team. There's some other people who performed at Hoopla regularly who are like in the actual cast, and there's some other people from Hoopla who are in the behind the scenes team. So it was really cool because I mean, I didn't know it was coming, and then before I know it, like the main producer from the UK was like phoning us up, we're having loads of chats about like here's how the comedy scene works, here's where to look for people. So it feels like we've got a good long-term relationship there. And yeah, I mean, it's only the second episode it's happened. And I'd say like our shows and courses, I think, have probably doubled in audience already because I think there's been a lot of press around SNL UK. It seems to be going well. And then also people are connecting that Saturday Night Live connects to like a lot of improv theatres, just like it does in America. So yeah, it does feel like there's another boom of improv coming.
Which is great. And I remember when I've done some improv courses, there's people, there's, yeah, you've got your actors, your singers, your dancers, your movement people. But then there were people in the class who were like managers at restaurants, people who were barristers. It was like such a smorgasbord of occupations. So I think like improv and the skills, whether you do it on the side or as your full-time income or you bring it into your everyday life, I think it's so important. Are you also noticing now with the world of social media and consumer habits and streamable content, is maybe the comedy landscape slightly changing? Like in the fact of obviously because of like TikTok and so on. Yeah, talk to me a bit about that maybe and how that's hopefully helping your business, but maybe also impacting the comedy scene.
It's totally changed. I'd say I think overall for the better, to tell you the truth. I think before comedy was a little bit too reliant on Edinburgh Fringe, I mean, I love The Fringe, but it was very much like to make it in comedy, you had to build up a show, take it to the Edinburgh Fringe for a whole run, and then probably not just once, but like 4 years in a row before you're really getting any traction, and then maybe leading to agents and awards and stuff. But I mean, for years, like that's what the comedy industry was geared towards, and like, I mean, there were some massive problems with that. Like, it's very expensive to go there, and it's already kind of self-selecting certain people that can afford to do that, or you just end up with people in loads of debt taking to their show. So it's already cutting off like loads of people who just can't do that. I think there's already a slight rebellion against that in the comedy scene, where loads of people like were just like, I don't think I'm going to bother with the Fringe anymore. It's got too expensive. The room's too expensive. And people were just like, well, let's just focus on making comedy where we actually live. And I think the online is being good for comedy, because then there's just another way that people are being found now, like on TikTok or Instagram. People can put sketches and they can get an audience of like hundreds of thousands, which is way more than they would have been getting at Edinburgh. So I think Edinburgh is still important. I just think it's just not the only way anymore. Because if people are good and they're putting in the work, like I think in improv, like I think Shoot from the Hip have been a great example of that, where they were an improv group that's been on the live scene for years. Like they used to perform at Hoopla pretty often, known them for ages. And they're just very early adopters of TikTok and just like very hard working at it. It's like, they absolutely deserve the success they're getting, because they've just like committed to performing a lot of live shows, recording them all, like absolutely on it with the editing, getting stuff out there, like great communications with their fans. And they're an improv group doing Live at the Apollo now this autumn, which was just unheard of. I think that's going to be the biggest improv show the UK's ever seen. And so yeah, there's no way that would have happened without online. So yeah, it is important.
Yeah, I think the way also look, I guess, was how consumers are, they want those bite-sized nuggets. But I think, as you said there, and obviously with accessibility kind of a big driving force for Hoopla, it's good that you're welcoming that and also maybe scouting talent that way. Because it is, it's also taking it maybe out of it having to be linked to a comedy club in a major city. It's obviously making it a bit more regional. You speaking of kind of that, you've got campuses all over London. I know like London Bridge, Liverpool Street, the some in West London, things like that as well.
That's
Why
right.
is it important to you maybe to have those different central hubs? Do you find that you get different, whether they're coming from parenting or work and they can't always make it across town? Is it quite important to you that you kind of have those different hubs?
It's good that I don't usually get to talk about the business side of improv, so it is actually really interesting to be asked this sort of thing. One, it's kind of a necessity, because like London's so unreliable in terms of venues that if you're all in one venue, you're just totally vulnerable as a company. So there's all manner of stuff that can happen to venues, like even ones you own. Things come and go. So yeah, one, it's like safety as a business is to spread out that risk across different places. But also, I think Londoners, like I grew up in London, and so I know it really well. And like Londoners don't think of it quite often as one city. I think they think of it as like lots of small hubs and areas. So there's like the place where you work is different from the place where you socialize, is different from the place where you live or where your friends are. And then yeah, we found like, I remember it really hit me once where we had a workshop in London Bridge, and then that venue had a problem. So we emailed everyone saying we just got to move across to a venue at Bank. And I don't know if you know the area, but like Bank and London Bridge are so close. I mean, it's literally 5 minute walk across a bridge or one tube stop. So emailed anyone, didn't think it'd be a big deal. And then like, yeah, a quarter of them wrote back saying, oh, I'm gonna have to drop out, I can't make it, it's too far. And it's like, what? So like London, I just found that the London audience is very sensitive to like where things are, like and just like, yeah, the slightest, like if you get that wrong, it's really difficult to recover from. So that's why, like when we got our show venue, The Miller in London Bridge, it's only like 4 minutes walk from London Bridge. The second I saw it, this pub that was up for us converting it into a theatre, I just hopped on it straight away, because I thought this is going to be like so easy for people to get to after work, and like people love that they've finished work and they can walk there, and it is important to Londoners, so that's the main thing. And yeah, people love being able to do stuff easily after work. That's another important thing. So yeah.
Well, I guess it kind of feeds into that idea of play and making it as easy and taking away that point of resistance. Because when it is, if it is the idea of, oh no, I have to travel 2 hours for a class, or it's an unreasonable hour. Also, your clientele isn't just performers doing courses. You obviously work with corporate clients,
That's right.
speakers and stuff like that. Why do you think maybe that side's growing as well? Is it because in this world now, when everyone is a brand, it's probably really important that people have some concept of play. And obviously, that I love that term in improv of like hold on tightly, let go lightly. That idea of obviously having an idea, but if you need to be malleable and flex something else, you can. So, why do you think in the world of or off stage, should I say, it's improv is such a good thing to learn?
It's a good point because 20 years ago, when we first started doing improv for corporates, it was hard because people would think, "Oh, this is a weird thing, or this is unusual." And I think over the 20 years, like, improv's become like much more accepted in corporate culture, and I'd say like very normal now. So like, especially because it became a big thing in America first, and there's a lot of American companies in London. So for a lot of them, they're like, rather than thinking, "Oh, why should we do improv?" They're kind of like, "Well, of course you should. Why wouldn't we?" So we kind of do a lot of graduate schemes now, for instance, where we're part of like big graduate schemes where there's like an improv unit or improv inspired training. I mean, the main thing, there's lots of different reasons. I think one of the biggest is like agility, like you said there, where there's so many things that are changing. I mean, if you just look at, I mean, it's just crazy, isn't it? If you look at like how much the world is changing, how quickly. I mean, I don't know how long ago was it that we weren't, no one was talking about AI or knew what Chat GPT was. Is it only a couple of years, it feels like? I mean, I'm not a tech person, so for me, I was like, it wasn't really know anything about AI. And then someone's like, "Look at this." First time I used Chat GPT, I asked it some improv questions. So I was like, "Oh my God, this is ridiculous. Like, how on earth is it doing this?" It was crazy. And that's just the beginning of it. So it's just like, I tell my son actually, which about technology is like, there's changes coming that we can't even possibly fathom at the moment. And so that, and in terms of where improv comes in, like a big part is agility, is just being able to pick up on rapid change, like really rapid change in a company, and see opportunity rather than threats, and also be open to change, like you said, like don't hold on too tightly and to ideas and things, because yeah, we have to sometimes go for it with projects and ideas, but then absolutely massive changes are just constantly happening now in the modern world in companies. So that's a biggie. And then I think the other things as well is a lot of graduates get into companies maybe through technical routes. And I think since I was at school, I'm like in my late 40s, I think school's become like even more academic than it used to be. And a lot of them are going through university and school without any sort of drama training at all. It's not on the national curriculum. Maybe not used to public speaking, maybe not used to kind of talking up in a meeting, not used to working in a team, that you can go through the whole of university without doing any teamwork at all. And so that's another big part that improv kicks in, is people giving people those, like, it's kind of like yoga for your soft skills, where you're learning about listening, rapid collaboration, teamwork, like confidence with speaking up in a team. So that's another big part that we help with.
I love that you said that yoga for soft skills, because that's something I always talk about, those soft skills, whenever I'm lecturing at performing arts universities. And I'm like, your talent will get you over the line, but it's quite often those people want to work with people they like. So those soft skills and how you are adaptable, deal with pressure, problem solving, empathy, all of that. So apart from coming to see the lovely 20th anniversary festival, because the lineup, I'm just flicking through it now, is exceptional. So I will definitely swing by myself for a couple of shows. But why, if someone was maybe there, what is their entry point to improv? If someone thinks, I want to be in that environment, I want to be collaborative, where should they start?
Thank you. So every month we have a beginner's improv course starting. So that's the best point by far. So that's we're doing 8 weeks, as in the same night each week for 8 weeks. And it's just 2 hour session each week. The beginner's improv course is best place to start. People come from all sorts of backgrounds. They don't need any experience of improv acting, drama, or anything. Like, genuinely mean it, if people have done nothing before. And They're learning through games, they're learning through playing, there's a lot of laughter. It's very low pressure, but yeah, that's the best place to start.
Great. And then if there's someone who is listening who's a bit scared to start, what would you say to them to like, because again, you don't know what you don't know. So since getting it, because you, it's almost a caricature sometimes of improv, isn't it? Of like, what is it? But then once you're in the room, you're like, oh, like a lot of it, obviously the whole idea is being grounded, isn't it? And building from that. And so if someone's listening and they're like, they're scared, what would you entice them with to get them over the line and into a class?
I mean, the first thing I'd say is just I have complete empathy for that because I think the hardest thing is turning up, definitely. Like, I remember when I first got into improv, I saw a show and they said afterwards we do classes, and the guy said where to con gave the number out because it didn't have a website at the time. And it took me about 3 months to get the courage just to phone him to find out where it was. And it took me about another 2 months to get the courage to like turn up. And I remember going to my first class, like walking around the building twice before I even walked in. But like you said, like it's the turning up is like the hardest thing. And that's what most people don't do. There's for everyone doing improv or drama or acting, there's like thousands more who thinking about it who aren't doing it. So I would say just be aware that it's like it's very baby steps, just take small steps and like just turning up is enough. That's fine. And like you don't have to do everything. But once you do arrive, you'll find it's just largely playing games and having fun. And it's not like you're not going to be put on stage and pointed at and shouted, you know, be funny now. It's not
Yeah.
going to be like that. And kind of like just be kind to yourself as well, really. Like I find things, I mean, I've been doing improv for years and I get nervous before shows, but you end up with these funny little rituals. Like I will, you know, take some time to have a nice little sandwich at the cafe before I do a show. And I'll take time to like sit on a park bench and meditate for a little bit and, you know, just let the stresses of the rest of life go before I turn up. So being kind to yourself as well beforehand is good. And just know that your improv's one of many things that you can choose to make space for in your life, like creative things.
And I definitely think I urge any performers who are listening or watching this to go, because I think it helped me when I used to perform. It helped me with the idea of making a choice and just being confident in that choice. Yes, the casting team, it might not be the choice that they book you for, but they value that more, that you come and you offer, as opposed to being so in your head as a performer to be like, oh, what am I doing? And you kind of, you're on the back foot as opposed to being on the front foot.
If there's anyone else setting up something or the early ages of setting up a business, I just had some helpful thoughts. And the first one was the kind of myth of the impoverished artist, because I think it's really unhelpful. And I think it's like the main thing to absolutely defeat if you're working in the creative industries, which is at some point, a lot of us. I remember being in an improv workshop where the teacher, I won't say who, is doing a get to know you exercise. And he was like getting you to stand in different places of the room, but a lot of it was choices. And at one point, he said, those of you who want to like make art and be successful creatively, stand here, and those of you who want to make money, stand over here. And I was just like, what is this? This is crazy. Like that's right there is the origin of the myth of the impoverished artist. And I think at some point at schools, like people have been told, like, oh, you know, you could do that, but you won't, there's no money there. And you're just like, okay. And it just like eats away at people. And before you know it, they're in their 20s trying to make a break of this stuff. And they're living with this like weird myth and like sort of like an archetype that's being tattooed into their unconscious by various people. And I think for me, that's like a big thing that you just have to absolutely smash. And I was lucky enough to have a few mentors that helped me with that. And one was John Creamer, who's my first improv teacher. And he just said some really clear, blunt advice to me. He's because I was struggling for money in my mid-20s, and he was just like, well, you think of yourself very creative, don't you, Steve? And I was like, yeah, because I was doing loads of creative stuff on stage. I was really happy with what I was doing on stage. And he said, but you're not making any money. I was like, no. He said, well, you can't be that creative then. And I was like, what? What do you mean? He said, you need to be creative about how you make money. It's like, why are you just being creative for like 2 hours a week on stage? Why aren't you being creative about all these other problems you have in your life? And it was so fucking blunt. I was like, oh my God. This changes everything. is like the creativity that you have on stage should be going through the rest of your life. Like, how are you going to get out of this life situation you don't want to be in? How are you going to make money? It's like part of, it's part of the joy of living, really. So that's my big thing, is just to like smash through that archetype, really, and don't accept it as truth. We're not living in Victorian slums, It's not Charles Dickens, so there's loads of opportunity there. And I think also the other thing I got is to like the early stages for me, set taking Hoopla from what was like, just a hobby into being a business. I started to be very careful about who I shared plans with, and I started to be very careful with like who I was getting advice from, because I was like, why am I listening to all these people that don't run a business? They're very quick to tell you like, this isn't going to work, this is stupid, you're going to lose money, this, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? But once you start listening to people who have been running a business for like 40 years, they're like, of course this is going to work. They were like, oh, this is a great idea. That they were like, oh, improv's big in America, but not here. This is great that you're in this quickly. And they'd be like, rather than say, oh, you're too young to start this, they'd say, it's great you're in your early 20s. This is a great time to start. And those people were, I started to listen to them more, and other people a bit less, just have to let that wash over you. I found the very early stage to start a business, very few people tell you it's a good idea, because in the end you have to like not rely on encouragement. You don't really get it. You don't really get encouragement until it's actually working. Then there's loads of encouragement. People are like, oh wow, this is brilliant. Like 20 years now, loads of people are like, oh, it's great, it's been such a big success. But at the start, there wasn't really many people saying, like, no one really comes up and says, this is a good idea, you should go for this. But that's why you have to be, that's part of being a leader in business, is you just have to like think, well, I'm just going to do this anyway. And you don't have to, you're not reliant on external praise at all, really.